This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Gioioso Cheese. Bel Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty. Hello and welcome to this very special edition of Extra Serving, a podcast by Nation's Restaurant News' Last Bite Network. I am your host, Holly Petrie, here to welcome you to the pod. And we are here with the last episode from COEX, the IFMA conference. This is our special culinary edition. We have two very smart culinarians here to tell us all about food trends. We talk about the supply chain, but really we talk about food trends, what to expect in the culinary world. It's very exciting. Sam interviewed somebody, so it's very interesting. I interviewed Matt Harding of Piatta's, and Sam interviewed the former culinary head for Reef, who's now a chef. And so it's very exciting to hear two different perspectives from two different worlds talk about what the culinary scene is like and what trends we can look out for. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, this is our last COEX episode before we get into all of our episodes from WFF. We just got back just now, so we are really ready to release those episodes, and you're going to hear them coming out on the feed very, very soon. So stay tuned for those. But in the meantime, here is us wrapping up COEX with our last two culinary interviews. So enjoy them. So Matt, let's talk about whatever you want to talk about today.
What would you like to talk about today?
Let's talk about food. Let's talk about some of your new food innovations.
Great. That's a good question. So I'll tell you what, through the pandemic, I think what guests, well, I can tell you like the journey of the pandemic and everybody talks about like, you know, all of the things that everyone did and all the pivots and all the new terms and all that stuff. But people were really looking for comfort initially in the pandemic, right? And then they were looking for their favorites. And I think we're at a kind of point now, hopefully, you know, obviously the news of the world is not the greatest, but I think that people are looking to be a little bit more celebratory as they see kind of what's happening forward in terms of a lot of mask mandates, and people are going to be looking for flavor at a higher level. I think it's just part of the celebratory nature of kind of putting some of this in the rearview mirror. I think it'll be more seasonal, so it will come back. But for us, we're looking at higher flavor profiles. So we've done just recently an LTO with a hot chicken. And so it's kind of a really take on Nashville hot. We've had the product for a while, but we're really bringing it to the forefront now. So we're going to focus on flavor and fire while it's still cold out. And then in the spring, we're focusing on our salmon, which is a farm-range salmon, but it's really got a kind of a great story about it. We're serving it on our farmer's market salad, which has some fresh strawberries and roasted corn and sweet lettuces, and it's got a real lemon vinaigrette. So we actually squeeze lemons, which I get a lot of grief for, because you can't replicate a fresh squeezed lemon with something that comes from a bottle.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of grief about that, which mostly from my end, from the operators and the teams are like, why are we squeezing so many lemons? But I think it really does make a difference. So the freshness of the food matters. It doesn't matter what concept or what restaurant you work in or where you work.
And you know, when you talk about freshness, how has the supply chain impacted that? I mean, we've all heard it. We've all heard the supply chain woes. How has that impacted you when you talk about all of this freshness of ingredients?
Well, I look at menu development more of, we are the experts at the last 15 minutes of the journey, the last 30 minutes of the journey. I'm going to look for vendors and companies that can work on the first between 1 and 5 hours of that journey. So anything that does take, you know, the freshness, we're trying to add that right at the restaurant level. So for instance, I'll have somebody scale up the seasonings for the dressing mix, but we're going to add fresh lemon juice, and we're going to add extra virgin olive oil, and we're going to blend it right on site. so you still have that fresh punch of flavor, not something that has to be, you know, safe or shelf stable for a long time. So we're still adding the cues when they're most important and leveraging our vendors to really work on that piece that gets us, hey, it's a packet with 24 ounces of fresh lemon juice, you know, and then extra virgin olive oil and a little bit of regular oil.
So tell me about the food at Piatta in general. We kind of went into the new menu innovation. We sort of jumped into the exciting stuff first.
You know, for guests who don't know Piatta, and we've got a relatively small footprint. We've got 42 restaurants this week. It'll be 42 next week. We're opening in Houston. So a lot of people would define it as an Italian version of a Chipotle, which I think when we hear that from our guests all the time, it's certainly flattering. I think Chipotle has done an incredible job in building something that's changed the landscape of fast casual forever.
Everybody's looking to be the next Chipotle. So.
I know. You know, we want to be the next Piatta, right? We want to be just a bigger version of ourselves, all grown up, and we don't have to eat at the kids' table. So, so you can get three types of experiences at Piatta. One is our namesake. It's the Piatta, and it's basically a rolled piadina in Italy on the West Coast. There is in the Emilia Romagna. There's a piadina dough, which tends to be a little bit thick. It all depends on where you are. Well, we serve a version that's thinner than that, and we roll it and put fillings in it like lettuces and hot chicken and warm sauces and things like that. And the second one is a pasta, and pasta is comfort food as comfort food gets. So we offer two different sizes and multiple combinations. You can create your own. And then the third thing that we do really well, I think we do really well, is salads. And again, it's just about the fresh cues, right? It's about making a great Caesar salad or a great farmer's market. My favorite salad going on right now is the bacon and blue. And it's got a couple of polarizing ingredients with blue cheese. But I love it. I love the dressing.
I love blue cheese.
Yeah, me too. And I usually have that with steak, so grilled steak. And you know, so I think there's a lot of freshness. We get a lot of credit for having fresh food, and we spend a large amount of time and a large focus on making sure that food is the best it can be.
Well, so you talked about opening in Houston. Congratulations.
Yeah, this is going to be our fifth store in Houston. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations on opening up the new store. I mean,
thanks.
Expansion seems like it's on the horizon for you guys.
It is. And I think every company that's done well during the pandemic is really focused on how you can leverage your success into growing the brand, growing the footprint of the brand. You know, we always built and we always thought of Piatta as something that could scale and grow and be a national brand while still maintaining that kind of regional footprint. And we're continuing to go into Texas. We are in the Ohio Valley and we're in Minnesota, but we really love the atmosphere of Texas. And if you look at Dallas and Houston combined, their metro would warrant a lot more time spent and restaurants open just from the overall size of the market. And currently Columbus, where we're based, is the 14th largest metro in the US. We've got, you know, approximately 10 stores there. So yeah, you can do the math, right? And without entering different markets, which doesn't dilute our span of control. And for us, because we're all company owned, we are maniacal about our vision. It's something that, you know, we definitely don't want to give away the secret sauce yet. And I'm not saying that, you know, franchising couldn't be a deal later on. But we're still working on refining and getting the hospitality where it needs to be.
You're still in that emerging brand area.
Absolutely, yeah.
We were having this discussion last night. We're still in the emerging brand area.
We're still in the emerging brand area.
But, you know, you're growing, and that's what's important. You're still in the growth mode. So it's fun. It's exciting to be there.
So I think two things about the growth, right? So first, during the pandemic, a lot of restaurant companies that were kind of ready and had pieces in place saw growth. And one of the things that I think helped Piatta was that we didn't necessarily close the restaurant during the pandemic. You know, we took precautions. We separated our teams. We actually did close up the dining rooms for a while, but we still did to go and carry out. So the guests, and we had a digital presence, right? We were on the digital world, and we had just presence with that. So all of those things began, and as the pandemic really kind of matured, we actually brought more people onto the tech team and pushed harder. And instead of using a white space app, we brought on our own app that we created ourselves. And for a company that's, you know, less than 50 restaurants, you can go to Piata and download a gift card onto our app, and then I could actually gift you any amount from that gift card to you. So, you know, I think punching over its weight is something that we've really tried to do with our tech teams. And I have to be careful because we're really not a technology company. We're a hospitality company that serves food and technology. And that's the way we want to look at it.
We talk a lot here about AI versus hospitality versus what's going to be the future of that dynamic and that battle. So
it's a blend, right?
Yeah.
You have to have a blend. I think that there are certain people who don't want to interact and they would rather have the digital experience. But I think any time that you can get warmth and hospitality from another human, that's a good thing to have.
Especially in times like these.
Yeah. Well, any day, right? Even on a good day, right? I want people to smile at me, I think.
Like we're face to face. This is so nice.
This is nice. I feel like I should wear a mask over my mouth. I am wearing a mask for those of you who are not watching.
No one's watching. No one's around. Don't
worry. Okay, I'm wearing a mask. Totally.
Well, just to wrap it up, tell me something you're excited about in the food industry that's coming up.
I'm excited that people are unsure of what's next. And if you've worked with people in food service, you know that they're a special form of deviant. they take the abnormal and the not readily possible, and they figure out a way to make it great. And that's one of the things that I think the food service industry has done. It's one thing that it taught me is that if you want to make something great, you can't think the same as what brought you to this space today. And give us the kind of problem that is very difficult, and that excites a lot of people. And as a matter of fact, you probably saw the best out of a lot of food service companies during the pandemic because they had to innovate, they had to rely on their wit and their skill. And that's what gets people in the food service industry up in the morning. And I feel really strong. I mean, we serve the guest in the United States. We keep the country moving. And, you know, I'm not looking for credit for that, although I would like some fan mail. But I do believe that we're a unique bunch of people who enjoy working on problems. So I'm really looking forward to the innovation that will come out of the last stages of it. And I think, you know, we've gone from having problems with supply. It's more going to be about pricing as we go into this next phase. It's more going to be about, you know, hey, you know, with some of the geopolitical issues that are happening in Eastern Europe right now, all of Europe gets their oil from one place. They're mostly their cooking oil from one place. And I'll let the readers, kind of the people on the side, figure out where that is. So you know, it's planning ahead, it's being innovative, it's looking to share. So those are the things that I'm really looking forward to. And then there's also the food, right? There's also the food, and there's also the guests. So I'm really excited to have guests come back in our restaurants and to feel safe and to start to enjoy their life publicly as they've had to do it privately for the last couple of years.
Sounds like we have a lot to look forward to. So
I think so.
Well, thank you so much, Matt, for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Gioioso Cheese. Bel Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty.
Nicole Votano, thank you so much for joining today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about yourself. You're a chef, right? So tell me about like how you came up and why you wanted to be a chef.
Yeah, so I'm a chef, operator, hospitality consultant, but definitely started my career in the chef world, more of the fine dining type of thing. Thought I wanted to go in the James Beard, Michelin type route. But slowly as time went on and kind of trends started changing, I saw that I really found a sweet spot in fast casual. So beginning of my career, I was in San Francisco and worked at One Market for Bradley Ogden and ran all of their banquets and like corporate events and stuff there. And then ended up moving to Miami and working for the Four Seasons, and which was an amazing experience and learned a lot about standards and things like that there. And was Michelle Bernstein's corporate chef for a few years. So did all of her operations and new openings, and actually ran her cafe for her, which is kind of what got me excited about being involved in the more fast casual space. And and then had my own consulting company for a few years. And while I was doing that, Reef absorbed me from one of the concepts that I was working on that they were taking on. So, and then spent the past year and a half being the head of culinary and concept development for them. So everything from figuring out like, how are we going to take a, you know, something that's in a full brick and mortar and fit it into a, you know, a food truck size, to creating new concepts like DJ Khaled's Another Wing that he came out with and was the chef for that and all of the things there.
So I know, I mean, chefs spend so much time having to pay attention to what's coming down the road, you know, future trends, things like that. And I have to imagine you're talking about, you know, working in fast casual, working in the, you know, virtual brand space. These are very trendy sectors of the restaurant industry. So how do you follow trends? What does that process look like for you in terms of figuring out what's going to be the next big thing and then incorporating that into a concept?
For me, it's a lot of traveling. I love to travel, and I travel a lot for work anyways. So it's a lot about hitting different spots as opposed to going to, you know, two or three restaurants a day and having a full meal, but more going around to like different cafes and fast casual concepts, coffee places, convenience stores, and seeing what they're showing there, because I think they sell a lot more volume. So as much as you get from going to, you know, a full out restaurant, seeing what consumers might want on the higher end side of things, when you go to those more like fast service places, you get a lot better of an impression of what people are buying a lot of at that time. So I try and let that lead in a lot of cases. And then of course, social media, you know, it's a, what's a better way to find out what's going on out there than that right now. Pictures, I think, are the name of the game. You know, a lot of the time you don't even need to read about what someone's serving or what's in it or what the ingredients are or, you know, what part of the world influenced it. It's more just like, oh, people really like to look at something that seems crispy and glazy at the same time, or could be something as simple that as that in a lot of cases.
Thinking about trends, you know, before the pandemic, it was always, you know, this thing of trying to figure out what's the next big culinary trend, right? And in fast casual in particular, it was like, you know, poke had a moment. And then certainly plant-based foods became sort of the
plant-based
big thing.
Even still, it's interesting with the plant-based foods, because I think it's like time to start looking at it in a different way, where it's not just about like, put something on there that a vegan can eat. It's about like, my ex-boss was a big meat eater, but he would order the Impossible Burger, you know, once or twice a week, or he was eating so much of that type of food that he wanted to have another option. He still was going to order the burger, but he felt a little bit better about, you know, being able to order that instead, still get his burger craving filled, but be able to do it with something else. And I think that that's what a lot of consumers are looking to now. So I think the plant-based trend is here definitely to stay, but I think that we as innovators need to start looking at it from a different perspective. Like recently I created a concept for meatless farms called Meatless Mob that they're doing in Europe. And it's not a vegan concept. It uses real cheese. They even have like cheesy fries on their menu and all that. There's options for people who are vegan, of course, so that if they want that, they can have that. But it's a way of showing that you can do that hybrid thing. You don't have to eliminate anybody from the equation. And I think that's important when you're designing a menu in any case.
So it's been interesting, though, in the last 2 years with the pandemic, you know, I feel like so much of the focus and the attention has shifted from, you know, what's the next culinary trend to how are we serving it? And what's the, you know, with off-premises service becoming the big thing, and then and digital. And so talk to me about, from a chef's perspective, looking at the last 2 years and the changes in the restaurant industry, what can you do with that to, as a chef, to, you know, apply some culinary expertise to it? Like, how do you find the perfect dish to serve in these new ways that are available for restaurants to serve food?
I think it's a lot of it is looking at what you already have, which we weren't doing as much before because, you know, the sky was kind of the limit. We could get whatever we wanted. We weren't worried about these long timelines for equipment or for a certain product that we wanted to use. We could say, oh, I want this like crazy kind of sriracha that only comes from this one purveyor, and we'd be able to use that. Now you can't look at it like that. Mm-hmm. It's more to look at it as, okay, I have these 40 ingredients that I'm already using. How can I make 3 new items using only 2 new ingredients to add to it? Because I can't worry about that maybe they can't source this in Texas or Dubai or wherever I'm sending it to.
Yeah.
I think you really have to focus on speed scratch a lot more than before too, because labor is such an issue right now that you have to think about not just what people want to eat. Right. You know, there's so many more factors that go into it now with different operational challenges and procurement challenges and space challenges too. I mean, at Reef, you know, sometimes we're operating 6 concepts out of 1 food truck. Like, how do you do enough cross-utilization but still honor every brand that you're working with?
Right. So speaking of procurement, I mean, of course, now we have all these supply chain issues that are going on right
now. What a nightmare.
Yeah, talk to me about that. Like, how do you, I mean, in perfect days, in a perfect world, you would just, you know, pick the tastiest thing that's also not too expensive and you would make a thing out of it and it all would be hunky-dory. But now I have to imagine that you have different filters by which you develop
totally.
Your food.
Yeah, it's completely different. Yeah. I think that, like I said, you need to choose ingredients that are more middle of the road. Like, if you're going to make something a unique flavor profile, you need to do it yourself by using those speed scratch methods. I think that, you know, there's a lot of different ways to approach it that people are doing, but it's a tough one. You know, like, I work a lot with procurement teams, and I think that that's the most important part of it is to have that communication. So not just with your manufacturer, because you can go straight to your manufacturer and they can be like, yeah, no, like Ken's can say, yeah, no problem. I have tons of that buffalo blue cheese dressing. Put it on your menu. We can service you everywhere, but Sysco may not have it in every MSA. So there's a lot of different people that you have to talk to make sure that what you want to use is in place. It's almost better to work backwards in a way and say, I want to use this ingredient. Let me see if I can even get that everywhere that I'm going to need it.
Right.
And then let me start making something. Because sometimes you might go to Sysco and they say, well, I don't have that Ken's one, but I have my Sysco one all over or whatever they want to, you know, want to encourage you to use because that's what they have everywhere. Mm-hmm. And to see, oh, is it worth it for me to use that? Or should I try and do something else? I have mayonnaise, sour cream, and blue cheese in every MSA. Maybe I just make it myself in this case.
Right. Interesting. All right. Last question for you, Nicole. What should we be looking for coming down the road as far as, you know, menu trends to watch or just other culinary things that we should be keeping an eye out for, especially considering everything we're going through, a pandemic and all the challenges? What's the next year going to look like, do you think?
I think that there has to be a huge focus on this, like, to-go and delivery food space. I was really surprised that in the panel that that I was on today, that when they asked about if any of the manufacturers were thinking about ways to approach that delivery type of food to make it better, or if they were doing innovations in that space, that nobody raised their hand. And I right away said, you better, because that's really what the future is. You know, I think we're going to see more and more innovation in that area. And if they're not doing it already, I think we'll see more and more of that, different types of breadings that'll stand up to something being fried and being put in a box and sitting there and not getting soggy. Obviously, you know, flavor profiles are definitely going heavily Asian and Latin right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that we've seen that in past years, but I think it's pushing even further to, you know, different types of Asian, like you'll maybe see more Vietnamese and Thai as opposed to like Japanese and Chinese, or instead of Mexican, you might see more Peruvian and things like that. I think we're going to start exploring more the different interesting flavor profiles that are in similar parts of the world, but yeah, they're so different from each region you go to. And I think that's going to be really exciting for us as chefs to be able to create new things with that.
And for us as consumers.
Yes.
So that's great. Nicole, thank you so much for taking some time. I appreciate
it. Thank you. I appreciate it.